The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGP OD. My name is Jules Cisek and it is Saturday, April 12th, 2008. And this is episode 122. Bob's on vacation, so I took the show for the next 3 weeks. Apologies for not having an episode out yesterday like Bob usually does. Couldn't get enough material together. I just got off a great call with Jim Race, which is basically going to be the entire show here. So we'll just jump right into that. I hope you enjoy it. Okay, with us is Jim Race, who we haven't heard from in about a year and a half, I think. And the last show that Jim Race was on was Laguna Seca. And I remember that you did this incredibly cool intro to that race where you came out of your camper, I think. You were staying in a RV.
You
recorded it like at 5 in the morning or something like that, and you're like whispering into the microphone. it was brilliant.
Hello, MotoGPOD listeners. Been a long time.
It's great to have you back. So Bob's on vacation, so we're going to have a party.
Woo!
Woohoo. We're going to talk about World Superbike races at Valencia last weekend, and we're going to talk about what's going on in MotoGP this weekend. We are now at 3 p.m. in California, so the qualifying session is over, so we'll talk about free practice and qualifying, and then whatever else comes up.
All right, sounds good to me.
So first, let's talk about World Superbike. We had one of the most insane races I've seen in a long time, the first race in World Superbike. How many people actually finished that race? Do you have any idea?
I would guess that within the first 10 laps, at least 25% of the field was gone out.
Yeah.
You had guys going down on the front, left and right. In looking at the conditions from a remote perspective, it didn't seem like that, you know, it was a sunny day. It was nice looking, but apparently, as the announcers were saying, the ground temperature wasn't quite up and people couldn't keep heat in the fronts. And what you saw was exactly that, guys washing out, low siding all over the place. Very surprising.
And a lot of times in the same corner, like
absolutely
the next lap, same corner, next lap, same corner, somebody else comes off.
And these were not inexperienced riders. We saw people from the top to the bottom do it.
Did Haga fall off? I forget now. I think Haga fell off, right?
Yep. Haga went off in turn one. I think that was actually maybe the third inch of the race. He was one of the last guys to go down.
Right. Well, there was two guys that went down, you know, a little later on that.
it was a very interesting race to watch. I love watching races from Valencia, and frankly the production values of that race were really cool, even if they didn't catch or weren't broadcasting too much from the middle rear of the pack, which is fine and normal and expected because the guys at the front with the sponsors are going to be getting money. But there are a couple of corners there that had some awesome coverage, and I forget which one it is. Maybe
When they do that little panning shot above the grass, they like lift the camera up and follow the bikes through. Incredible.
Yep.
Yeah, so they introduced that like I think about a year ago or 2 years ago, because I remember seeing that in the MotoGP coverage. And but it's not as long. I think they made the arm longer or something.
It seems like
a long flight.
It's a little bit of backstory. Many years ago, I worked as sort of a helper to Speed Vision, which is the predecessor to Speed TV. And at one point, I worked with one of those long reach cameras at Laguna Seca, and they're really cool and they're extremely unwieldy. They produce those awesome shots where obviously it's almost like a mini helicopter flight, but it's essentially just a counterbalanced arm that is extendable to whatever reach, and they'll throw the additional weight on the back. But the problem is that there's a guy sitting at the other end with a remote trying to make sure the camera is pointed at the riders throughout, and they'll sit there and practice this over and over and over again. And it's hard to describe except for picture holding a video camera out on the end of a 35-foot wand and somehow remotely manipulating it to follow the rider. It's quite a talent.
And it's breathtaking to see.
Yep.
Very cool. Yeah, so yeah, and in general, they have a lot of cameras around that track. I think we saw a lot of angles of the same action.
Absolutely.
It wasn't we're still talking about race one. It wasn't a race that I would say was as exciting as like the Australian round, even though in Australia Troy Bayliss really ran away with it. It was unusual. And then Carlos Checa has been doing really great since he came into this series. I think he's probably the most impressive guy, considering that this is the first time he's been on these bikes. And
absolutely, and especially considering that the Hondas came into the season pretty much undeveloped.
Right.
Yep.
He did really well in Australia and in this race. I mean, he had a completely different pace, different lines, and he had that last corner. What is that corner with the decreasing radius called? Do you know?
Oh, no, I don't.
I can
make it up and try, but I won't even try.
Right.
probably curva something.
Right. it's one of the most interesting corners, I think, in motorcycle racing, because it just goes on and on and on, and decreases, and at the very end it's quite tight and you gotta go pretty slow. And he actually had a really great strategy going through there, where he kind of pounced on the riders at the very end of it, where they were lining up for the drive out to the straight, and he would cut in front of them kind of and he did it like three times. He passed people there.
His pace was
fantastic.
Yep, it was a road racing equivalent of a motocross block pass, and it worked quite well almost all of the time.
And then we got to the last lap, and so we're already spoiled at the race. I mean, obviously we're giving some of the results away. Max Lukesner was in the lead pretty much from like the
lap one.
Was it lap one that early?
He took the whole shot, and he never relinquished the lead until the incident on the last lap.
On the last corner.
Yes.
Basically. Yep. So, what do you think? I've read some very interesting comments on the various forums that we inhabit, and I'm surprised people are not screaming bloody murder. I realize it's a racing incident, but
I believe people were impressed by the fact that he tried that and nearly pulled it off. And for those people that haven't seen the race, apologies, but basically he made a last second, although clearly earlier planned, maneuver up the inside of Neukirchner into the final corner. Probably came very close to actually making the corner, and if he hadn't lost the rear end or front or whichever, the angle wasn't very good to be able to tell. Also took out Neukirchner's front tire, and the guys in first and second both went tumbling off into the kitty litter. I think people respect the audacity of that attempt and maybe aren't condemning him because it made for an extremely exciting finish. Now, look at it this way, Jules. There are going to be some people, especially those in Neukirchner's camp and the folks with that Suzuki team, that were, I'm sure, extremely upset. It was my understanding that there were some 1,800 people that Francis Botta had brought in to that race to attend the race and see everything that was going on. So, you know, all of them were up in arms. But it would have been his first win.
And on top of that, he did get to ride the second one because he's hurt.
Absolutely. He broke his collarbone. Yeah. And to make things even worse, from their perspective, Checa remounted and managed to finish fifth, which I thought was pretty ballsy.
yeah, definitely.
Considering how hard they both went down in the gravel, I was extremely surprised to see him back up and finish that well. So I don't know if it's grudging respect. I can't say, but I'm a little surprised people weren't more up in arms. But maybe there's something in the human psyche that's allowing him to do something like that. I don't know.
But it is the last lap. I mean, but it just seemed like a 125 race mistake, not a seasoned veteran type of mistake.
Well, remember how far back he came from. So, obviously he's Spanish. And it's in front of a Spanish audience. This Checa we're speaking of, he came from about seventh position with about maybe seven or eight laps to go, and way back to pass up the guys behind him, Lanzi, Bayless, with beautiful clean passes, and obviously the crowd was cheering him on. In fact, on watching the TV or actually watching the online cast and listening to it, you get to hear the crowd.
Actually,
nuts.
I know. I was amazed at how well you could hear them. They were
absolutely
going nuts, totally.
And so the crowd clearly isn't. I mean, sure, there was collective gasp, and people are freaking out there, just going, "Oh my God, what happened?" But I think people were just impressed at the fact that he made it that far. Yeah, he took out the leader. Big drag, but wow. Beautiful attempt.
Yep. But, he has a reputation for falling, so it didn't help him in that sense.
No, it didn't, but he doesn't have a reputation for falling in World Superbike yet.
Well, no, he does now. It's...
And if you think about it, he also... did have a fall at the Phillip Island round, but that wasn't necessarily his fault.
Oh, that one during the red flag?
Yeah, going into
Lukey Heights.
Yep, Lukey Heights.
Yeah, that was. Yeah. I was amazed that he was actually able to get up after that crash.
Yeah, he's no spring chicken.
Yeah. So anyway, the person who benefited the most out of this obviously was Bayless.
Well, Bayless, you'd think, but apparently a couple of corners back prior to us all watching the drama into the final corner, Lanzi got him passed. And I never have seen that pass, or I haven't seen that broadcast or pictures of it anywhere, but Lanzi got past Bayless, and he ended up winning the race, which is a big deal for him because he got essentially booted off the factory squad last year.
That's right. That's true. But I'm just saying that, like, in terms of the championship, Bayless is the one that got the most out of it.
Absolutely. Yep.
Because his fourth turned into a second. That's a lot of points.
It certainly is. And he's got a very solid hold on the lead now.
Yep.
And is not helping me in my my various tipping competitions on the net.
And,
in fact, I was stuck with I started the season with Biaggi and Corser, and I've recently made a small change in my tipping.
I can imagine. Small, quote, air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Biaggi had a mechanical problem. It looked like he couldn't shift. And then did he end up just DNFing?
No, it looked like he'd hit a false neutral, and I think it was going into – I'm not sure what corner it was going into. I believe he did finish the race, and I'm sure loyal MotoGP subscribers will correct me if I'm wrong, but he was pretty far down may have, I think he finished just outside of the points, maybe 16th or 17th.
He did, actually. You know what? I just remember that. He finished 16th, and there was a lot of commentary about the fact that why didn't he just stop? I mean, he's still recovering from the injury with the hand. He's got another race to go the same weekend. You know, that's I actually always was impressed with that. I mean, with Biaggi in that regard, he just is really a fighter, you know.
He's also a little crazy.
He's a little nuts, of course. Yeah, I know. But you know, he's the kind of guy who, like, will the bike will crash and there'll be parts missing. He's still going to be trying to pick it up and get it back on the track.
Absolutely. And in considering that he's riding on what is essentially a satellite squad, there's still development information that can be garnered in a race pace situation. So, and you know, he's riding on tracks on not necessarily that he doesn't know well. Obviously, but Lenzi is not one of those, but one in which he can gather additional information on a bike that isn't new to him. You know, this race won at Valencia on a bike new to him. Is there got to be something he can learn?
Right. That's true. Good point. Good point. And he didn't do that badly in the second race, so I guess it paid off.
Yeah, I've got a big ignorance on the second race. Unfortunately, this week I have yet to have a chance to watch it. It's sitting patiently, hopefully, on my TiVo in the corner, but for a discussion of the second race, I can leave that up to you.
Yeah, I'll skip it because it was not nearly as exciting, and I'd rather not monologue while you're on the phone. So,
we can point out the winner.
What's that?
If you'd like. We can point out the winner if you'd like. The gentleman that caused a fair amount of havoc in the first race.
Why do you say he caused it in the first place?
Or, I'm sorry, not the winner, but my apologies. Third place, I believe.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yes.
So he did well again.
and from what I understand, with a failed traction control system, which is pretty impressive.
Oh, really? On the
yes.
on the Tenkata?
No, okay, let me stop being obtuse. Cheka.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I believe he lost his traction control at some point during race two.
Oh, you're right. He was waving his hand to let some, who was he racing with at the time? I don't remember anymore. But yeah, that's right. He waved a guy by while he was in the lead. What's his name? It was Haga, of course, who ended up winning the race.
Yep.
He waved him through. And I think it took him a couple of laps to figure out how to ride it without whatever went bad. And everyone was saying must be electronics because everything else seemed to be working. So,
sure.
Traction control sounds like a good explanation.
Yeah, there's some black box somewhere.
Yep.
Well, considering that traction control on that bike, like every other part that's propelling them to the front, is still probably slightly underdeveloped, I think he did a great job for bringing it home in that condition. So in the third place, not bad at all, especially when he went down in the last race.
Yep. Oh, yeah, good weekend overall. I put a caption under that photo you stuck of him jumping out of the airplane.
I don't
know if you saw that yet on the Ride On 2 forums. So he did some skydiving. I guess was it Wednesday?
I think it was Wednesday.
Before. And it's a beautiful shot because you see the entire Valencia circuit and there's Cheka falling, and so I put underneath a little caption saying, "Oh, I see Max Neukirchner."
I did say that. Yeah, that was cool. There were some great pictures that came out of that race. I was pretty much slammed last weekend and in the beginning of this week.
I should say, for those people that don't know, one of the biggest reasons to come to the Ride On 2 forums is to check out the Jim Race photo threads. They're incredible. You have access to pretty much every team's feeds, right?
There are very few teams that I do not have access to, both on the World Superbike front and in MotoGP. The ones that I don't are some of the HRC or Honda Satellite teams, and I think that their press officers just aren't answering or whatever. But there are still ways to get those through the official HRC pictures, but unfortunately they take a while to arrive. But yeah, I have been posting up photo threads there for the last few years, and on your average race weekend, I'll end up with anywhere from 300 to 500 pictures to sift through and try and present the best couple of hundred or so.
Yeah, and they're really amazing. I mean, especially, like, I like photographing motorcycles, so, like, seeing really? That stuff is amazing. Yes, I do.
It'd be interesting to have a MotoGP OD episode sometime to delve a bit more into racing photography, because it is a fascinating subject. And over the years, I've collected, since I've been doing this and grabbing these images, it's been about 4 or 5 years now, I have a huge collection spanning multiple hard drives, and going back and looking and seeing what the photographers have been able to do, and the advancements and the changes in ideas and creativity that have come about have been really cool. And absolutely, your photographs fit right in amongst many of those. Remember the 2006 Laguna Seca adventure when I was corner working?
Oh, of course I do. I have a fantastic shot of Mr. Depounier.
Absolutely.
Flying with his rear wheel in the gravel. That was amazing.
Fully airborne on the LC. No, what was he?
He was on the Kawasaki still.
That's right. He was on the Kawi.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, that's a great idea. And Andrew Wheeler owes us an interview, so we'll get him on the show.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So let's move on to Estoril and MotoGP. We'll talk about. I think this is finally the race that I've been waiting for, you know, since Valencia last year, where we're going to finally see, you know, it's a track that is not constricted like Jerez, and the conditions are not so strange like Qatar was. So I think we're going to see probably what's going to end up playing out throughout the season, unless, you know, well, yeah, I think that's this next series of races is going to be very key. Very telling. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Estoril is one of those tracks where it has something of everything and doesn't seem to, for the most, well, I was almost said doesn't seem to, for the most part, favor any brand of motorcycle. And I won't say tire, but that really, and we'll talk about that more in a bit. But it really does have a great mix of corners and conditions and traction that make for exciting races. It's got like the coolest chicane on the planet too. And I'm not a big chicane fan, but I love that chicane.
The uphill one?
Oh yeah.
Before the S's? Yeah. That is amazing. And again, they also have one of those, flying cameras set up over that thing as well.
Sure.
So it's going to be cool watching it.
And Estoril has the history of 2006 happened between Hayden and Pedrosa. So.
And between Tony Elias and Valentino Rossi as well. That
absolutely.
Same race.
It was, yeah.
Kenny Jr. too. I mean,
and Edwards blocking for Rossi. Yeah, I mean, it's
that was a legendary race, definitely.
Absolutely, and on top of that, it's also located, as I think Julian Ryder so aptly put it, a very long or very aerodynamic stone's throw from the Atlantic Ocean.
Was it right after the Kropotkin, actually? Was the one that wrote that.
All right.
It was David that wrote that.
Equally apt speaking folks or writing folks. But and so conditions there are often iffy, and they have been iffy this weekend, and we still don't know what's going to come up. We're all the way through FP1, FP2, FP3, and QP, and FP1 started off with changeable and nasty conditions, and there wasn't a whole lot of good to come out of that.
They were like 10 seconds off the pace.
About 10 to 15 seconds off the pace. It was a, as they said, drying track. Nobody really, in fact, I believe it was Guintoli that led most of that session, so that can give you a little bit of an insight as to what the conditions might have been like.
Right, right. And then, but FP2 seemed to be much more of what we kind of were hoping for in terms of conditions. Although still a bit cooler than we expected. I think people were expecting like 18 degrees Celsius, and it was like, I think, 14.
I believe that's about what it was. In fact, let me pull up my... indeed, 14 degrees, humidity 49%, ground temperature 22.
So the ground temperature went way up. That's the key, right?
Absolutely. And they're able to come out with tires that are suitable for conditions. The top speeds started to come up nearly close to where they were. And in looking over the results of that, they are not that much interesting. They're not a whole lot different from what we ended up with through the rest of the practice sessions. Not talking about free practice / race two, but your top five were Pedrosa, Rossi, Edwards, Hayden, and Lorenzo,
right,
guys that were right there at the end today.
And I think the interesting thing was to see that Rossi did well in both types of conditions, although he didn't like lead any of the sessions. He did finish second in both FP1 and FP2, which are very, very different conditions. So that's very interesting, because I think that, you know, that's kind of, he needs to get that information as well. I mean, this is only his third race on the
Bridgestones, yeah.
So,
well, on top of that, he didn't have anybody else Well, not that he ever does, but he didn't have anybody else that was doing well on Bridgestones to have a gauge off. As we all know, Stoner, if you've been following along, Stoner has been well off the pace this weekend and seems to be confounded, much like he was in Jerez. So who do you gauge yourself against? Your Yamaha teammates, and Yamaha's having an awesome year.
Yep.
But obviously, with different rubber on, you're a man standing alone, which doesn't seem far-fetched for something that Rossi wouldn't appreciate. I think he likes being that person and is able to play that role really well. But he was at the sharp end all weekend so far.
Yeah, yeah, and it's I think the key though is that the Yamahas are amazing so far this season.
They really are, and as we've seen with both Toslin and Edwards getting the pneumatic valve engine this weekend, they're both thrilled with it.
Yep.
And the top speeds are speaking that as well. Come to FP3, you've got Colin won that, clearly, and they were down in the 37.5 at that point, which was...
And those were not like
those are race tires.
Yeah, and those were not like one-offs. I mean, he did
absolutely.
He did them one by one. He had 30
one by
seconds,
one
like
by
five
one.
Of them, I think.
And at that point, his top speed is only 4K off of the highest speeds all weekend. Well, no, I take that back. Looking at the FP3 results here, we've got Colin Edwards in first at 3:14 top speed. All the way down in 17th place, poor Tony Elias, who had a little bit of an engine mishap that was kind of misdiagnosed by the media immediately following, but he had an engine link go coming down the front straight during FP2 yesterday, and apparently part of the clutch blew out and smacked the top of his foot and caused it, as Doc Costa said, a bit of a hematoma, and I think he was putting it mildly. So Tony's been in some pain. Anyway,
yes.
Colin, 3:14, 17th position. Tony Elias at 3:23. Huge disparity.
Wow.
And the Ducatis have been super fast all weekend. They've been at the top the whole weekend as far as top speed goes, but
there's only one place where you can use that.
And, absolutely.
You know, and the rest of the track is actually gets pretty slow in sections.
Yep. So.
Very interesting.
I'm thrilled to see the Yamahas at the front, and I'm thrilled to see, Yamahas at the front besides Rossi.
Right.
It's so competitive, and it's fun. It's fun to watch, and it's interesting, and it's weird watching Lorenzo. I don't know if you guys have talked about this before, but it's weird watching Lorenzo act mature. You know what I mean?
Acting mature?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was watching an interview with him, and I was like, okay, they swapped his brain out or something.
He clicked in. Well, if you remember before the season even started, through the various preseason testings, and he was even acting kind of cool then. He's like, you know, I know things aren't going to go my way necessarily. This is the training season. Of course, that's what everybody's told to say, which is smart because, yeah, you're not necessarily going to be at the top of the box if you're coming in as a rookie. But it's clear that the guy's coming in and he's making a hardcore impact and is riding really well. I would not have said at the end of last year when they signed him that he was going to be doing as well as he is now, but there's no doubt that the guy's riding incredibly well and is a talent that fits very well within the GP top step.
Yeah, I agree. I was definitely discounting him before the season started and thinking, because his preseason was actually pretty awful. He was having a real tough time. Both him and Tolson were having a real tough time getting used to these bikes. But they really picked their game up, like, in the last test, and then once the racing started, they were there.
You know, everybody, I think people are still, even people that should know better, are still making a little bit too much of preseason testing and figuring that into what they think is going to happen during this season.
Yep.
The real season.
Guilty. And I actually say the same thing all the time. Like, it's just preseason. Don't even. But then I do kind of think about it, like, and pay attention.
Yeah.
Well, mainly because I'm bored.
True. I mean, there's nothing like the off-season doldrums to make it, you know, for you to start thinking about things that aren't happening and trying to figure out what's going to happen and just making stuff up because we don't know, really. The only people that do are the people on the teams and the people that are racing the bikes, and all we can go by is what the media and the lap times show us. And it's the stagnant doldrums for us just waiting for the damn season to start.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, so FP3, top five guys. We've got Edwards, nicely done. 37.5, keep that, or 37.6, keep that in mind. Lorenzo, Hayden, Rossi, and Pedrosa. So, and Toslin right there in sixth. The rest of the folks, usual runners down there. With Melandro all the way back that's interesting. Melandri all the way back at the bottom, although still with high speeds. Moving on to QPE, because that was actually pretty cool. And with the qualifying tires, of course, come... Oh, let me mention this very quickly. The temperature in FP3, the air was once again 15 degrees. It was the same as FP2 yesterday, but the ground temperature was only 15 as opposed to 22.
Right, because it's morning.
So on the QP, and we've got nearly ideal conditions, 17 degrees air, 26 ground, nice and warm, low humidity.
Right.
And a bit of a breeze, but not too bad. Oh, and you haven't even had a chance to see it yet, so I guess it's going to be my turn to talk about it.
What's that?
QP.
Oh.
Well, I know that you've seen the results. And
I've went to the charts and everything. I just didn't have a chance to watch the actual video of it.
Well, it really was a classic qualifier. Strangely enough, I'm pretty sure that DePuy in his normal way was the first guy to come out with a qualifying tire on at about the half hour mark, either he or Edwards, one of the two, and put down a lap that was somewhere in the low 37s. And it was a good mark, and it was one to look at. But that certainly wasn't the way things were going to end up at the end. And the times started to drop, continued to drop. And I know that you've seen the results, but obviously the last 15 minutes of qualifying is when the fun really starts. In fact, you called me when I was watching it with like 20 minutes to go, and I'm like, yeah, I'm watching it. Call me back in a couple of hours. but it was great. And it was essentially the last 5 minutes. Everybody had turned in some incredible times. We were down in the 36s, then the low 36s, and with about 4 minutes left to go, or 3 minutes maybe, Lorenzo took 45 hundredths off of his own fastest time and dropped in a 1:35.715, which was shattered by far the prior best lap, maybe close to a second, and maybe even more, and laid that down. But there were still a couple of guys on course that were circulating with some speed, and one of those was Pedrosa. And watching him come around, and he's got all blues for him, blue, and I think he was about 0.4 off coming into the last section and didn't quite get it. But so we had Lorenzo with a 35.7, incredible. It wasn't one of those laps where you're pushing like crazy. You didn't see him, you know, bike wobbling all over the place. It was a very clean looking lap. So, kudos.
He actually said afterwards that he could have gone faster, he thinks.
Yeah, I think he could have. And, but none of that matters because
he already got the pole.
Yeah. And those tires, they're not racing on those tires. Interestingly enough, like I said, I think it was 4 minutes or so to go. He did another hot lap on those tires, and he got blocked by somebody. I can't remember who it was. Maybe Stoner. He and Stoner had a little bit of a hand-waving exchange near the end of qualifying. Probably more heated than anything else. But anyway, so your grid. Lorenzo was 35.7, Pedrosa with a 35.9, Rossi first Bridgestone with a 36.2, and did not look as controlled, but he's been consistent on race tires. Hayden Edwards on the second row along with Toslin. So you got it. You got Yamaha's just populating in the front of the grid, and it's going to be awesome. Dovey in seventh, great job. Depunier, in eighth position. And then Stoner back in ninth, not happy.
No.
Not happy at all.
And he basically leads the rest of the field, which is all Bridgestones. Basically, there's only one Bridgestone in the top eight, which is Rossi.
Yep. And I would guess that, well, you know, you and I talked just a little bit prior to the show about predictions, but let's back up a little bit here, not too far, but tomorrow's conditions from everything that I've seen and looked at in the various weather services, there is a 10 to 20% chance of rain during, and of what quantity or duration during tomorrow's race. So it could put everything back to the conditions of FP1, and at that point it's a crapshoot who's going to do well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We'll see West and Guintoli fighting for the lead.
And, you know, everybody still has a setup.
I know. Yeah. Actually, that's one of the things that Valentino said at the end of the first day, was that he is really happy because they kind of needed to have a wet session because he had no idea how it was going to work, and he's
true.
Happy.
True. And this is one of those times when I really, really prefer to see a dry race. I'm one of the few people that actually likes to watch wet races, but you know, sometimes they call it the equalizer. You and I totally disagree on this. I know that you hate wet races.
Yes.
I find them interesting from a point of view of trying to analyze how the various racers and teams dealt with it. But kind of come over your side. It's right. And what you really want to see is how the teams set themselves up best for the best conditions. But it's still interesting to watch nonetheless. The Donington World Superbike last year was one of the coolest races to watch, and that was like the horrible torrential downpour.
Oh yeah, you know, I actually like full wets. I just don't like the wet, the ones that are like kind of in between.
Absolutely, okay.
You know, like China was it 2005
or Phillip Island, but the Phillip Island in 2006.
That one was iffy, even though it had the greatest ending of any race ever in terms of
the one-handed slide with Landry. Yeah. Who, damn it, you know, I got to feel sorry for him. I'm at the point where I'm actually really feeling bad for Marco.
I think you are not alone. I mean, there's a lot of people that really, really like Marco Melandri. He's been he seems like a cool guy, a very, very tough racer, and seeing him struggle like this, where I mean, he's a you know, MotoGP race winner many times over.
It's painful to watch.
Yeah.
And you can see it in his eyes, and you could, it's almost like you're waiting for him to crack, but admiration of the fact that he hasn't, but I can't even imagine the pressures that are on him right now. As I've heard said, I think Julian Ryder said it today during QP. To paraphrase, it's no fun being the teammate of a champion, the previous champion, and because the expectations are so high, you know, he's on the same machinery, he's doing well. Well, at least some of the pressure is off with Stoner not doing well, but it still doesn't bode well for the entire Ducati army. I mean, something's wrong, and they're going to have to fix it. We say all this, and yet they won handily, or Stoner won handily in Qatar, but nobody else did well, and they haven't yet. So something's got to change. And I read a bunch this weekend, not from Livio Supo, but from one of the Ducati bosses, saying that they were going to be modifying at least Melandri's bike to try and make it more rideable. Whether that will trickle down to the Elite Chase squad, I hope it does, is a question still to be answered. You know, whether right, they can
they're,
change.
They're talking about like a softer chassis, I believe, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
And Stoner apparently likes it because he's able to get the, feedback from the bike quicker.
Well, he got a lot of feedback this weekend. he had a tank slumper in FP2 yesterday that was pretty impressive. And I know that people say, you know, he kind of, oh, I did, you know, when they say, wow, did you see that on the video? But it came down with his front tire crossed up coming out of, I think it was maybe the first corner, and just the thing was bucking and grinding, and I'm looking at it going, that's got to hurt. He didn't crash, although he had that slow crash on the exit of the real tight chicane in FP2. First lap is out lap. In fact, there were a bunch of guys that crashed on the out lap of FP2. So he went down. Toslin went down. DeAngelis went down. Who else? There were a bunch of guys in the first couple of laps of FP2 that crashed. So
I don't know. I haven't even looked at who actually came down. Yeah. Those.
Nobody was hurt. And in fact, Stoner's, you know, it was like a 30-mile-an-hour crash. The bike slid about 15 feet, and it wasn't damaged. Although the bad thing about that for him was that it ended up on the outside of the circuit, was not necessarily quickly recoverable back to the pits. So they didn't get that thing back there until there was about 20 minutes left to go.
He's not
a big fan of his B-bike, so he likes to do all his development on one bike. Well, it's been fun to watch this weekend. It's when I've had the time. You know, I say weekend. Unfortunately, I've been so busy at work that trying to spend any time to actually pay attention to the races, well, during my work day, is a little bit difficult. Luckily, my boss is also a motorcycle racing fan. You know, I got work to do too. So, but this weekend, I'm paying big attention. But on the other hand, my wife's giving me the evil eye because I'm also going to be moving in a couple of weeks. So I got a lot of packing to do around here. But I'm putting in my time this weekend on GP.
Very cool. And I appreciate you actually being on the show. So this is Lorenzo's third pole in a row. And last time when Bob and I were talking, we said that this was some kind of a record. And David Emmett wrote in and said that that's actually not the case, that... there was a guy I'm sure you're familiar with,
Jarno Saarinen.
Jarno Saarinen, who did that in 1973 on the 500s.
And then now I've actually heard that may or may not be the case. I think Julian Ryder penned that at maybe, but regardless. Nobody's done three in a row, and that's what Lorenzo pulled off today with his pole again. And so, that's definitely set in history. Not to mention that he's well on the way for the BMW M Award. He's got 75 points for that.
Hey, good point.
Yeah, and I think Pedrosa is probably second with, I don't know, half that. He's... and then probably the rest of Yamaha is all around. So, hey, something to look forward to. I watched the Eurosport version of QP today, and lent to me by a friend. Thanks. And apparently, after QP was over, Earl Hayden wandered out and said to Randy Mamola, who was working the pits, something along the lines of, "That boy's got three watches."
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good race tomorrow. Regardless, I'm really hoping for dry conditions.
Me too. Yeah, I mean, either downpour or dry. I just don't like this kind of thing that basically splits the race in half anyway. I mean, the white flag rule. I'm not used to it yet. I'm not convinced that it's the right thing to do, because you end up having with two separate races anyway, except that instead of having a official finish to the one and then an official start to the other, it's just all over the place, and it's kind of, random.
It's too F1-ish for me.
Yeah, that's right. It's a pit stop.
Yeah. I didn't mind before when they would red flag the race, with the exception of the fact that the guy that finished the second leg first wasn't necessarily the winner, because they're doing everything on aggregate time, and so watching it could be a bit confusing.
Yes.
And on top of that, what happens is, and I think the reason they went to the flag-to-flag deal, frankly, was because of television coverage.
Oh, yeah.
They've only got a certain amount of time that they've got that satellite feed, and frankly, the attention of the audience. Nobody wants to sit through a lengthy delay while they're, cleaning up the corners. And speaking of coverage, I don't know if you've noticed or if any of the fans have noticed, but the feed from MotoGP.com this weekend has just been horrible, and it has been from the very first feed on during FP2. I don't know if they're net-based facilities there or satellite there or whatever, but horrible, horrible. I hope they get their act together for tomorrow. But
it's actually been the case with pretty much every weekend. I noticed. I think they basically don't buy a lot of bandwidth for the first 2 days, and then they shoot their wad on the race
weekend.
Well,
then I hope that's going to make us sound like broken records. I don't know. I think last year, I think overall the feed was pretty good, and I only had a few instances where I couldn't log in immediately to a race, but it just at least the quality of the feed so far this weekend is not so good. And, you know, I hate to – no, I don't. I could say that I hate to beat up on Dorna for the MotoGP.com quality. And I know that they're making efforts with their beta site and everything. That's great because it's obvious that the existing user interface is horrible. But what the high-paying customers, i.e. us and me and you and everybody else, really want is the opportunity to see the races live. And if they can't deliver that experience, the rest is just a load of crap on top of it.
Yep.
You know, you just give me a single link, play race. That's all I really care about.
Exactly.
Not to mention, we don't have the opportunity to, like we were in the past, to be able to watch the full versions of qualifying and the full versions of practice. Or, you know, FP2 and QP, they don't deliver anymore. So, you know, darn it, if you're listening, don't just keep taking our money, charging us more and giving us less. That is a model that's not going to work in the long run. Eh.
Here.
Have you and Bob been ranting about this at all?
Dude, you know, like every show with Bob is MotoGP.com. I just can't stand it. I just can't stand it. Sorry,
well,
Bob.
I hope they're listening. I know I laud them for the fact that they're trying to make changes to the user interface, but, you know, the debacles that have happened over there have been races where you haven't been able to watch.
Well, Valencia 2006, I remember like half the people on the forums that I visited were like, we could not log in. By the time we logged in, Rossi had crashed already.
Yeah.
You know?
And so that is not an acceptable experience when people are paying, especially us poor saps in the U.S. against the Euro, you know, a couple $100 to get the high quality feed. Not to mention, we won't talk about the VAT situation, but you're not supposed to charge VAT to people overseas.
That's right.
Sorry. Anyway, let's talk about something cheery.
All right, well, I mean, let's... So, predictions for the race. I totally agree with you that I don't think we will see Stoner in the top five. There's just no way.
Not unless they pull something crazy.
They're not... And, you know, they may... They may pull something crazy, but he...
Well, they have to. They have to make a major change.
Yeah, I think they're going to take a risk with something, some kind of a change that is either going to pay off or not. But I think he's going to be an angry rider. And as we saw in Jerez, he doesn't ride well angry.
No, he doesn't. And frankly, you can see the tension in his pits, and you can see the tension on his face. And no, I don't agree with some people that say that if he continues to have results that are... subpar compared to last year, that he's going to cave under the pressure. I think he still has the capability of being able to keep it together enough in the long term to get results to the tracks that they're capable of getting good results at. Whether that will prove to be true going on is another story, but I don't see him on the box tomorrow.
Yeah. Yep. But who do you see? I mean, aside from the fact that we're, you know, competing in the tipping competition.
I won't even guess for mixed conditions. So leaving that, let's just say it's going to be as nice as it was this afternoon.
Right.
For QP. I'm going to take Pedrosa for the win. Either one of the two Fiat bikes for second and one of the two Fiat bikes for third, and a close fourth might be one of the Tech 3 bikes, probably Edwards.
Yeah.
I pretty much agree with that. Or DEP.
Right. I mean, I think that Pedrosa, if he can get away in the first couple corners, he does have the pace he led some of the free practice, didn't he?
He did. One of the things that I know that you've said in the past is that, and I kind of agree with you on this, is that he's not at his best when he's in a brawl.
Right. Well, he's getting better.
He is that, and that was going to be my exact point, is that I think that he is starting to develop the capability to battle with people without giving up, or not necessarily giving up, but giving in a spot.
Right.
And if this race may end up being the Pedrosa-Rossi battle, if the weather conditions are right and if things go well, that we've been wanting for the last 2.5 years.
Well, we did have that last year at Estoril, and Rossi won, but it didn't last long enough really to call it a battle.
I mean, I want a 23-lap long battle.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I hear you. And it's really possible at this track.
Especially with Lorenzo around. I mean, there's no doubt. I'm really excited about watching this race. I think it's going to be a whole bunch of fun. Throw the qualifying times out the window and you go back, and I haven't done it yet, but if you average their practice times, I think a whole bunch of people are going to be right on about the same pace, including Hayden,
yeah.
Edwards and Toseland, maybe, and if Stoner and Factory Ducati can, you know, they tweak the right nut and tilt the wrong or right bolt, maybe they'll be up there too. I doubt it, but I think this is going to be the first really cool race of the season, I hope. None of them sucked before. The other two races didn't suck, but I think this race has the best potential so far.
Yes. Yep. I agree. Totally agree.
It's going to make me get up at 4 o'clock or whatever to watch it, 4 a.m.
It's 5 for us, thankfully.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Anything else you want to chat about? We're up to 55 minutes here, and...
Oh, good Lord. Thanks for having me back again, and best to Bob on your vacation, and hope everything's going well, and just been chit-chatting with Leon in an email, and those of you that are interested in my particular bent of humor or are curious about the thousands of images that we have, feel free to come on by ride onto, that's ride on ONTWO.com. And drop by, and we'll pester you.
All right, Jim. Thanks a lot, man. And we'll try and get you maybe next week after the race. What do you think?
Sounds good.
All right, great.
Cheers.
Okay, thank you very much to Jim Race for making time to speak with us. That was a very interesting call, and I will make sure that this show is a little better structured next week and released on time by Friday. Going to be talking to Liam. We'll talk with Jim again. Darren Carpenter will be on the show the next show or the one after that. So we've got a lot of good stuff lined up. Hope you guys tune in. Thank you very much for listening, and until next time, ciao.